Welcome, everyone. Looks like we have some tired faces from from the campaign trail, and it's been a long haul. So glad everybody was able to make it out. So we will start with the approval of the minutes.
I make a motion that we approve the minutes as submitted. I'll second.
All right, all in favor?
Aye.
All right, okay. We are waiting on Commissioner Iaposi. So. In the interim, I will go to Dr. Smith, and the floor is yours.
Okay, well, I'm Kristen Carney here, who's our Deputy for Administration, our Chief Fiscal Officer, and Tara McDonald, who's Deputy Commissioner for Mental Health.
Right.
Good. So is the team. So. Okay. Do you have to start with questions, or do you want, how would you like it to be?
Well, let me see. Yeah. Well, did you wanna start, or if anybody has any questions in particular, or if,
I think a little summary.
Sure. Yeah, you can give.
Where you're going.
You
nice.
Can do that, and then we'll follow up.
Okay. From a fiscal standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Okay.
So we have tried very hard over the last few years, based on the directives that have come out, to keep our budget fairly flat. We have, over the years, I think, trimmed down to the point where we get by, but we can't really manage to lose much more. I quick looked before the meeting, and I printed out worksheet reports, so I have different reports than you guys have, but based on what we submitted to the executive's office and then the recommended 2020 budget that came out, the DOH budget is, the county contribution is actually down 1%, which shows that we're really trying to do due diligence to manage our budget, and the mental health budget is up 2%. One of the things in the mental health budget is we did increase criminal court order charges. Those are the people who are found not competent for trial, and they go to a state facility, and we have to pay for 50% of their care. We have seen over the last couple of years, as the state hospitals are closing and people are expected to be maintained more in the community, that our criminal court order costs have gone up. Years ago, it used to be we budgeted $300,000. Then eventually, we kind of went down and we got to about $100,000 a year. Now we're back up to, it's been $300,000, and for 2020, we've increased it to $350,000. We have a few high profile cases that are going to be in there long term.
So could I just clarify or make sure that I'm following this? Because the cost is going up because it is necessary to hire either more or additional lawyers to make the case.
No, what we pay for is their actual stay. If someone's found not competent, they go to a state psych hospital. The state pays 50%. We pay 50%. So the more people that get found not competent and go there, our costs rise.
Right, and that forensic hospital is upstate. That would be Marcy, right? So, caring for them. And the increased number of individuals found not competent but have criminality and they need a forensic hospitalization slash jail. That's
right. Sometimes you have cases where they only go there for a month or two, but we have a few that have been in a while and will probably be in
for homicide
a while longer. Some of the high profile. So that's kind of part of the reason why the mental health budget, the county contribution, actually went up. That's county share, criminal court.
I mean, your contractual also went up too, $100,000.
Which contractual?
4,600 miscellaneous. Is that training?
Right, but for which, I'd have to know which division. Our contractual, the state aid that comes in that we pass through is passed through in a contractual line. So any increases in state aid that really come in and go out, go to that line. So I'd have to know which division.
2320?
Yes, so that's the state aid line. So we've had increases for COLAs, for workforce COLAs, we just recently got increase for supported housing. What were the other increases we got this year? So it's passed through. It comes in and it goes out. So you should see a corresponding increase right. on the revenue side.
What is the stat? Oh, I'm sorry.
On the OMH side.
Oh, I thought you raised your hand.
No,
I was going to interrupt.
Okay.
what is the status for more housing?
Yes.
I mean, is there's they were looking in certain areas, and there was, you know, some concern about where it was going, but
right. So we sort of react to when they decide when we can get more housing, mm-hmm. and we, you know, quickly prepare to be able to accept the funding mm-hmm. and the slots, but they don't necessarily say, you know, or give us an opportunity to lobby for it.
Okay.
You know, the way in which they choose the formulas for who's getting what, it's not necessarily something that we're privy to. We just accept it whenever it comes down the pike.
And I haven't heard
sure.
of anything coming, but that doesn't mean it's not.
Go ahead, Liz.
I have several questions, and it's really for my edification mm-hmm. and clarification from a budget perspective. On the, I see that you're converting two FTE in each, the mental health side and the Department of Health, converting them to full-time? Or they were split between two of departments and now they're going to be dedicated full-time to each department?
Which positions?
Position, CSEA, an accountant, $2,200, both of them are $2,200. I guess they were split between mental health and health.
No, the accountant had been a public health nurse position
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
that we reclassified. We have someone in our fiscal area that has been struggling with illness, has been in and out of work, and she is the fiscal officer who does all of the Department of Health state aid. So we converted that position in hopes of getting somebody on board for fear that she's going to be forced into a medical retirement,
okay.
but we have been unable to get approval to fill the position.
Right.
Okay.
So it was always health, but it moved from patient services to admin.
Okay, so you haven't filled the position.
No, we haven't.
We need
okay.
to.
Because
yeah.
we haven't gotten approval, but in right. our
but
opinion,
were they
desperately
at
needed.
Some point were they being split? The time was being split between.
No.
Okay. Oh, okay. Because that's the way they came up. The, yes. So they're one and the same person supporting both units.
Well, it was a nurse position. The person retired.
Right.
We reclassified it to an accountant and moved it from patient services to admin. But it's always been in health.
Okay, and was that just reclassified this year?
Yes.
Okay, great, thank you. It was a little confusing.
Yeah.
And then I've got a couple of questions on some of the programs. One, the public health clinic, the goals and initiatives around the public health, is this a new initiative, a new division?
Which?
Page 114 in the book
mm-hmm.
here.
We don't have a new division.
Yeah, we don't have a new division.
No.
It's not a new division?
No.
114 is 4300 or 3120, division 2219.
And it's under the environmental grants. Okay, I see.
Yeah, 2219. Just without having it. Hold on a minute.
Yeah, we're probably looking at different books. That's
what
that's
the problem. Yeah, I ran a report, so I just want to make sure I know what I'm talking about here. So 2219 was a division that it used to be clinic. We used to rent space from Kingston Hospital. That division hasn't been used in a while,
mm-hmm.
but we have two new grants that have come down the pike. So what we needed a separate division to track the grant. So
okay.
This money is for the Columbia Healing Communities Studies
mm.
grant.
Right, the healing.
Mm.
So the title just doesn't match what it is because we needed a separate place to track the expenses for grant reporting.
And how much did you get in that? Was that the $191?
Yes.
Okay.
it's revenue.
So this is really just for purposes of tracking?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
We were like, what divisions aren't we using? And we were preferred to pick ones.
Rather than
I don't know how
one.
Easy it is to rename them in the financial system, but that's what that one is.
Okay, on the environmental grants, it looked like, you know, we had gotten, you know, some inconsistent grants over the state aid over the year. Last year, you were budgeting it originally, I guess your original under the adopted budget was 63,700 in 2018. But in 18, you only received like 27,900 and change.
I'm trying to find the same place. So 2218 environmental grants.
Right.
So part of that is funding that we get from the DEP for work we've done. So if the work fluctuates, the revenue fluctuates depending on our time logging. And then the other piece of that, I hate not having my papers, might be a TUPA.
Might be, I'm sorry, I didn't catch that.
A TUPA, it's the tobacco grant.
Oh, okay. Yeah, because you were saying you were expecting 63 this year, and it looks like as of the end of October, you brought in 43. Is that about right?
With
and
the
we're
DEP
anticipating work? The same. You're basing your budget on your history, so I'm just looking at what
right.
your
well,
run
no,
rate
we
is
have
for.
To for the at least for the rabies grant, we base our budget based on the grant allocation.
And the grant allocation.
The DEP we have to base on history because
it
fluctuates based on the work.
Based on the work.
Yes.
Thank you for helping me understand that.
Okay.
Okay, I think that was it. Thank you. Oh, I'm sorry. There is one more.
Okay.
Page two.
You only get three questions.
Sorry. One page at a time. The raise the age. You had no budget in 18, and we know there was just some money that got applied there. But there was a budget for 2019. But it doesn't look like it's not being captured and carried over into 2020. Can you just explain? What I'm looking at is there were communication, there were computer equipment leases, contractual expenses, professional expenses, almost.
I think that's the SS.
That's not us. So.
I think.
Oh, okay. So they put in there.
Right.
Thank you. Okay.
Okay. Lynn, you have.
You know, your opening comments were very helpful in terms of setting the context for the budget. So we are trying to balance the fact that we want to provide all the services with where the money comes from. Is there a place where you feel that the state aid or other aid doesn't sufficiently come in and that is not yet reflected in the budget? Or does the budget as it has been crafted here, and I know you're saying that you're stretched thin in terms of doing any more decreasing, and I think that's fair. But is the opposite really a problem that we should be looking at, that there are things that you really think the community needs that we have not yet found a way within the current budget to address?
Well, there's always things.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not asking for a wish
yeah.
list.
Right.
But I guess what I'm asking
you know,
for
I
is,
mean, I really
are there any gaps that we should be aware of now that we could try to do something to be of assistance to the department
well,
going
the
into 2020,
that,
I guess is what
well,
I'm asking.
One of the things that we're facing, some imminent retirements of very key people, one of whom just told me on Friday that she's retiring after 32 years as the Director of Patient Services. And a number of people in her particular division of our combined agencies are anticipating retiring in either next year or shortly into the following year. We also have an environmental engineering, professional engineer line that we absolutely have to fill because we have also pending retirements in environmental.
Anyone knows any licensed public health engineers?
Well, part of the issue is that, you know, these folks are, you know, Booty has a master's in nursing and 32 years experience with the department. That's huge for us because she's been a sort of a bedrock of stability during the course of changes in public health directed to commissioner and gaps between. So we have to reorganize patient services entirely based on her now imminent retirement. The next person, her assistant, has over 32 years in the department and is looking at retirement, as does the senior public health nurse, both of which. So we're looking at some major losses of staff that will seriously impact, I think, our ability to carry out even our Article 6, work that is obligated by the state for us to carry out as a health department. And with the environmental, the public, the professional engineer position now having been vacant for months, because it is difficult to fill positions with professionals of that advanced degree and ability to fill this kind of regulatory work. So the future is not bright with respect to the staffing of both health and mental health, I'll be honest with you. This accountant position manages, what, 7 million coming in through the O agencies into the mental health side with contractual pass-through to the local governmental unit. The state, financing is extremely complicated. We get a base grant of $650 at the, being thankful to the State Department of Health, which could change at any point. And then 36% reimbursement on top of that of Article 6 allowed functions of our staff. So that would be chronic disease prevention, communicable disease prevention, family and maternal health, and various things that come under Article 6, the permitting of restaurants and inspections of food service venues and all of that. But, you know, looking at now, which is really a bare bones staffing with the anticipation of very key retirements within the next 6 months to a year, can impact us seriously across the board, in all honesty.
It's really a challenge.
It's a challenge.
Mm-hmm. And are the salaries such that if we lose some of the more senior people, that we will have from that budget line sufficient funds to be competitive
for
hiring?
That's a good question. Very good question, because we're in competition with some of our contiguous counties, which are, you know, facing some of the same issues. So, you know, for instance, Dutchess pays more for the public health engineering positions than we do. So if somebody has the choice of working for Ulster County versus Dutchess County and they're going to get paid more money in Dutchess, the answer is obvious where they're going to go.
Clearly private industry.
And private industry, but we are in competition for some of the same professionals with respect to the different county health and mental health departments in the counties that are in our immediate region, let alone across the state.
Thank you. That's the kind of thing I thought I wanted to know.
Well, it keeps me up at night. I don't think at any point in my tenure here, which is now into my seventh year, have we reached this critical juncture with respect to staffing, professional staffing.
Just a quick question. Go ahead.
I could. Oh, I'm
sorry. No, go ahead. Yep.
And so because of the specific skill set that they have, it's not like you have multiple people or others beneath them that you can train and develop and move.
Yeah.
So so have you identified the key jobs in your area where specific skill sets and...
Oh, yeah. One of them is the accountant position that's been vacant now for quite some time. That's a very key position. The other one is going to be a senior public health nurse position that has the ability either to serve as, a director of the department Also, the Department of Health side of our enterprise does not have a deputy commissioner for health. Mm-hmm. We have a deputy mm-hmm. commissioner of mental health, which is Tara. We have deputy for administration. Kristen manages to cross both health and mental health worlds very well. But from the DOH standpoint, in terms of succession planning, et cetera, there is nobody really who has the credentials that the state would approve as an assistant or as a deputy commissioner for health.
So they set the tone when, for what credentials are required.
Oh yeah, when I first came on board, you know, the stages were, Mike asked me if I was interested in serving as commissioner of health and mental health, and the next step obviously was the legislature approving that appointment, but then it had to go to the state level, and I had to be vetted through the commissioner of health, the commissioner of OMH, Office for Mental Hygiene, the commissioner of OASUS, Office for Alcohol and Substance Abuse Services, and the commissioner of OPWDD to approve my doing the commissioner of health and mental health here in the county. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So it was vetted on the state level by the state commissioners as well as locally with the county executive and the legislature. So. Yeah, and you know, it, the commissioner of health has a definition, has to be an MD, has to be an MD with an MPH, with experience, etc., from the DOH side to serve as commissioner of health. So yeah, we are responsive both to the state level mm-hmm. as well as to our local jurisdiction, and we are bound to uphold both the state sanitary codes and across the board, as well as the Ulster County codes and regulations. So it's from both sides.
Just as a follow-up, so does that put mm-hmm. at risk then any state funding? Say you have a retirement and you're having a challenge
building?
Well,
the state funding is based on the provision of services.
So if you have nobody in that job,
correct,
okay,
right.
So it
yeah.
would impact your
yes,
revenue.
Yes, it potentially could impact that revenue.
Right. I mean, basically on the DOH side, all of our staff have to time log, and they track what they do, and then when we prepare the state aid claims, we look at how much time were you doing Article 6 eligible activities versus
right.
ineligible activities. So our revenue does fluctuate based on, you know, having like the revenue in our budget is based on spending every dollar, having every position filled, and maintaining kind of a status quo for the percentage of eligible, ineligible. Anything that changes tips
which goes back to my question about the fluctuation. Mm-hmm. That mm-hmm. makes sense.
Which
thank you. That's
with,
helpful. I appreciate
with
that.
With all due respect, with the passage of certain county laws that do not come under Article 6, 100% of the time spent doing that would not be
would
reimbursable
be
for that 36%, or even, yeah, it would be ineligible.
But actually, you know, the first 650 is at 100%, and after that it's 36%, so we've actually done an analysis over the last few years. The average reimbursement, when you combine those, has been about 55% on our eligible
mm-hmm.
activities.
Right.
But
thank
ineligible
you.
Or...
Zero, like the medical examiner work, zero. We get no state aid for that. It's just not eligible for any of that.
Mm-hmm.
It used to be about 7 years ago that you could claim for medical examiner work or time, and that went away in its entirety. So it's 100% county share.
Mm-hmm. You had mentioned earlier that I guess maybe the state mandates were up, what, 1 or 2%, and the county was down. The county's contribution was down by 1% or something along those lines.
For DOH, the county contribution mm-hmm. for 2020 as put out by the county executive is down 1%, and DMH is up 2%.
It's up 2%. So there's, what, then about a 3%, right, that's left that is somewhat unaccounted for that are paid for. How do you go about covering those expenses, and is there flexibility within your budget? Say you over budgeted on one program or service in order to
Not necessarily. See that the time logging, time and effort reporting, etc., is so. This is partly why we, you know, our fiscal team really is on their game, because we literally track in increments of 15 minutes. half hour what our staff does with respect to time and effort, so that we know when we go back and do our internal audits that, you know, John Doe spent, what, maybe 3 hours doing restaurant inspections on a given day, or 3 hours and 15 minutes, so then we can attribute that to an Article 6 reimbursable function, mm-hmm. et cetera. So it's, but if John Doe, by the way, also had to do, you know, inspect for, how can I say it?
Styrofoam, plastic bags?
It's not reimbursable.
Not reimbursable at all, because it just doesn't come under the Article 6 regulations.
Yeah. We'll have to consider that when we mm-hmm. write new laws.
Because it may involve, one of them is the composting law that's recently come up, because, you know, if any of our staff do any of that work regarding the composting initiative, none of that would be reimbursable mm-hmm. under state. And it would involve hiring perhaps someone mm-hmm. to fulfill those responsibilities with 100% county share of that salary, which can really add up with fringe and everything else very quickly.
Interesting.
Mm. That's really interesting.
Isn't
this
it?
We just
yeah. No. Unintended consequences.
Yeah. Maybe we could do something with that unfilled position in the environmental department, the environment, and have compliance put into that position.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because it seems like this gives us reason, those of us who will be here in 2020, mm-hmm. to have this kind of conversation early in the process mm-hmm. of planning for some of
Absolutely.
These new programs.
Absolutely. So. Yeah, an environmental compliance person, given the fact that we have so many environmental initiatives. Mm-hmm. Seems to make sense. I've had this discussion with Manajo, and I had actually brought it up and asked Kristen to do a fiscal impact of the law as it was originally written, putting the obligation under the Department of Health when we don't do any of that kind of work, and what it came out to like $250,000 more to the county that would have been really at the point not considered. Yeah.
So
nice
then, because you've lost the Article 6 funding, you couldn't use you couldn't use that same person. So that's really some extensive staffing analysis to determine: are we maximizing our return on funding?
Mm-hmm.
And if not, what functions need to be done and which ones don't, so that we understand what the impact will be to revenue.
Or what department to assign it to, depending on the fact that it may implicate, you know, if, for instance, if Amanda is not getting any kind of reimbursement on the time of her staff in environmental, but we know that we can lose a significant amount of our reimbursement for our staff on the DOH side.
Yeah,
got it.
Mm-hmm.
Got it.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Thank you.
Yeah.
That'd be
helpful. And there is state funding for composting education and compliance.
Yeah.
And they already do the, you know, well, I know that UGGR is its own entity, but when you look at the law that 935 or whatever it was that UGGR was originally founded under, in terms of the, you know, public commission, whatever it's called, the benefit corporation
benefit
law,
it
really attributed a lot of law of legal responsibility to UGGR to do a lot of work with respect to the planning and the development and even sales of their, you know, compostable material, et cetera, or whatever at the end. There's a lot that was given to that as a public benefit corporation right at its inception. And, you know, if we are looking at planning long term with respect to which we are, how we're managing, you know, the refuse, et cetera, right down the line, I think, you know, looking at that, UGGR's responsibilities legally versus, you know, looking at the county departments needs to really be done in terms of assessing whose authority does this really come under, and, you know, and looking at fiscal impacts to the county doing that, so.
Good. Anything else? Any questions? think that was good.
Thank you. We're always available, you know, if you have questions, we're happy to help answer them, because it is a complicated world for sure.
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay.
Good luck.
Is that something that you is that non-competitive civil service, or is it a administrative professional job? I know which position. Well, there were three environmental
is CSEA,
professional engineer.
Is CSEA and SPHN is.
But assistant or the director of patient services is not.
Right.
Okay. And there's
That's
no one
appointed.
On the list who's passed the test.
I don't think there's. I don't know if there's a test for that.
No, I don't think there is.
No.
I would have to check.
And we just found out on Friday, so.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Haven't really done the research yet.
But you know, you look at the longevity. You know, Booty has 32 years. The assistant has more than 32. I don't know exactly how many. The secretary is like 40 years in the county. I mean, very long-term employees who are now.
It's definitely a loss.
Yeah.
They're losing your foundation.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, hopefully somebody
can. And you can build it back, but
it just takes
time.
It does take time, if you can find the right.
Is there any way they can stay on, like a per diem position to train?
The county has that. I don't know, but we haven't had that before. She may not want to, yeah.
But, yeah, we have to explore all that.
Good luck.
All right, we'll keep
us
informed.
I don't mean to be the bearer of bad news, but it's the reality of what we're dealing with.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
All right, we want to know.
We will move on to you. Thanks, yeah. Commissioner Raposi, welcome.
Thank you. Good evening. I feel a little better after hearing Dr. Smith. We have so many similarities in terms of the dynamics around what happens with regard to our programs, our mandates, our personnel, in terms of a really complicated landscape, and the challenges that we're going to be facing in the very near future with some incredibly qualified staff who are going to be winding down their careers. And I think looking back over the history of how those individuals arrived at their positions and evolved into their expertise is something that doesn't seem to be being able to be arrived at the same way. Just talking about losing portions of your foundation, one of our deputy commissioners is a 40-plus year employee who is going to be probably winding down. Our director of economic support programs has also been there for 40-plus years. Contemplating winding down, and just the nature of the duties and responsibilities that staff see these individuals performing makes it incredibly challenging to create any kind of incentives because of the salary that's connected to some of these positions. And they're very special and unique individuals who, again, evolved over decades to be in these positions, but the realities that we're facing economically now and the demands on those people. So
and
I feel better, but I also feel for you.
Oh,
we're not alone.
But also, and I think you all attest to this too, is that public service type work, government work, isn't the same, I don't think is viewed by the workforce in the same way as it was 40 years ago, et cetera. It's different, and I think the pool of folks that, you know, are trained, interested, and eligible, et cetera, is very small. And again, we're in competition with other counties for the same population of staff, so.
And a lot of our contiguous counties, you know, do offer enough to make it more attractive, potentially. I mean, we're also experiencing what you just mentioned about the workforce.
Yep.
There's just not the same principles at play. There's a lot of really talented people out there that are interested in these careers,
but I don't think they're approaching the opportunities with the same commitment to the long term.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, one of the areas where we've seen it more significantly is with our child welfare caseworkers that span the spectrum of doing CPS investigations, child protective services investigations, preventative care, foster care, family assessment review. We've never experienced the rate of turnover that we're seeing over the last 5-6 years. And the newer workforce comes in with an attitude that they're receptive to giving the position a try, but if it doesn't happen to be working out, they're not really that interested in continuing to pursue it. And because we have a large number of people arriving at retirement, and civil service is also making it very challenging. We're exhausting lists all the time, so we're hiring provisionally more frequently than not. So then those persons have to wait for the exam to be offered, and then they have to score high enough on the exam to then be reachable. And that's provided that they've done well enough during their probationary period that we want to retain them and they want to stay in the job. I was so thrilled that at the end of August, we were finally fully staffed in child welfare services. And then that lasted for about 1 month. And in the span of the first couple of weeks of October, we ended up losing 4 people. And the loss is tremendous because the investment that we make in staff to get through foundation training at OCFS to be able to shadow experienced caseworkers and then for us to have the confidence in those people to perform the work that's required. And sometimes after 6 months, 8 months, a year, to lose somebody that you've made that investment in. And, you know, it's the reality of what we're seeing in our society and culture around how people are approaching opportunities. So we also have to make some adjustments.
Right, and they're not
really retention and recruitment.
Yeah, they're not looking for that long term. I mean, at one time, the idea of having a pension in the state system and all of the other benefits of whatever kind of counterbalanced maybe the salary. Now it's for the most part salary.
Yeah.
If the next job offers $1.50 more an hour, they're going to go there.
And it's not an easy profession either. It really takes a special person in order to be able to deal with and, quite frankly, you know, stomach a lot of the day-to-day. I would see a higher rate of burnout for somebody who just, you know, has to see what and deal with, you know, the day-to-day.
Is that what the turnover is, or is it salary? I mean, do you have a sense of what you know, the turnover you're
what the drive is behind
there's
it.
Any one indicator, or is it all across the map?
I think for us, it's all of the above, for sure.
Mm.
And we're also, you know, in terms of some of the other stuff, I mean, you know, the numbers going up for the consequences of fatal overdoses, the kids that are now in foster care, and, you know, the kind of the fallout of some of these sociologic issues is just so widespread.
I think it's all those dynamics. We have a larger number of employees with longevity who are approaching retirement.
Mm.
It's getting more challenging to recruit because the civil service lists just don't generate as many candidates. I think people arrive in the position with certain expectations, and then their experience is different, and they're not prone to try to get through some of those difficulties they're facing and to make adjustments. I mean, we're constantly meeting with caseworkers and addressing issues around, you know, their safety, their caseloads, the fatigue, the pressure, the stress. And you know, these are things that are difficult to predict, you know, during an interview process and even during the initial training period. You know, sometimes we're surprised at some of the individuals who wind up going through the process and flourishing, and some that don't. I have to agree with Dr. Smith that it's all of those things. And I think on a very base level, because of a strong economy, a lot of opportunity, and other positions that pay more with a lot less responsibility and a lot less stress, you're seeing us having a difficult time competing with that.
Yeah.
We've agree.
Absolutely. 100%.
They're still bringing on board a lot of very capable people with incredible energy and great skill sets who are making the transition. It does make it difficult for succession planning, though, for some of these issues. Administrative positions, and for some of our positions, I had the same vetting that was required of me when I became commissioner back in 2012. So these are positions, that are demanding, and they're arrived at after you've acquired a certain degree of qualifications and experience. And I think, we're constantly always trying to meet all of our mandates, all of the county initiatives, and I think we've demonstrated we are a pretty incredible county taking on some of these issues, because it reflects on the fact that we're not just driven by what the fiscal implications will be. And we find that we're always involved in the same kind of analysis around how much reimbursement can we capture for a specific function. How much are we going to get from the federal government? What's the state contribution? And then what is the county contribution going to be? And we're constantly undertaking that same analysis, because we want to capture all the funding that we possibly can. We're also very active with regard to grant applications. That creates opportunities that then you want to arrive at sustainability around. You qualify for a grant, you get funded for 2 or 3 or 5 years, or you participate in a pilot, and then you're successful at assimilating that service into your organization, but now what do you do when the funding is no longer available? But I think, we certainly have been functioning in a county where there's a lot of receptivity to progressive ideas around the unique work that we're all doing. And I think Integrated Ulster has been just a great example of what can be arrived at. I feel like there's never been more collaboration and communication and teamwork happening.
And the end result is the individuals needing the service are benefiting, right?
Right.
They're experiencing something totally different.
A lot of intersectionality, a lot of overlap.
Right.
I mean, the opioid epidemic has created circumstances where we have children coming into our care and custody that have been arrived at due to an investigation where primary parent is suffering from potentially an opioid addiction. So we want to make sure that reunification of that child with that parent or parents is always going to be our mission. So we're integrating services, mental health, the Department of Health is helping that person to be able to try to overcome and arrive at some stability, because recovery is going to be for the rest of that person's life. And ensuring that child's safety and well-being is also going to be for the rest of that child's life.
And also, because we're aware of limitations of funding and resources, we're trying to eliminate some, gaps in services by collaborating in different ways and maybe more robust ways, and looking to kind of increase the return by mutually working together, et cetera. And I think that intercooperative between different county agencies, et cetera, is great. Like now we're seeing a whole new interest on the part of the Sheriff's Department in working with us more collaboratively, et cetera. And, it does spill over to a lot of other county agencies and even to some state agencies. This business we were talking about with working with the DEP and doing some of the work that they can't manage, and, how we're going to then get reimbursed for doing that, that sort of a thing is a rather novel approach as well. So,
I know there were a couple specific questions that I got worried about.
But we're going to do the budget first before we go to resolutions.
Yeah, we'll do the budget.
Just want a few basic remarks about our 2020 proposed budget.
Yep, and then if there's any follow-up.
Okay.
Yep.
We basically had a budget that came in just slightly above what our 2019 budget was. The breakdown obviously continues to be arrived at with administration personnel and programs. There's a couple of areas where we're definitely seeing some trends that impacted what we allocated to particular programs. Personnel-wise, we're basically sustaining. We had about 320 positions, and we are arriving at 322 positions for 2020. There's a swing, though, of about five positions that we arrived at. We had three positions in our 2019 budget that are going to be transferred to other departments. We have one position going back to Information Services, and we have two other positions that are connected to the Restorative Justice and Community Empowerment Center that are going to go to probation's budget. Those are going to be arrived at, provided that everything that's in the proposed budget gets implemented. So we went there from 320 to 317. So we're adding five positions, which are basically around child welfare. We have three new caseworker positions, a senior caseworker, and a caseworker aide. And we also have one social welfare examiner that is going to be in Medicaid. So the request to increase personnel in that area is due directly to the increase that we're seeing in children coming into care and custody and cases that we're arriving at. Now, going back to about 2014, 2015, we had reached a relative low of children in care and custody, around 100 or so. We've seen a steady uptick where we're above 200. And I would say the larger percentage of that has been arrived at because of the opioid epidemic. We have many more infants and toddlers that are coming into care, again, attributable primarily to the opioid epidemic, to the degree that that has obviously been a very insidious and devastating epidemic in terms of substance abuse. So we're trying to manage that to be able to provide the necessary level of services. And I think the child welfare breakdown that most of you are familiar with consists of the child protective services. They do the investigative work. We have one caseworker title, and that caseworker title spans across all of these units. We have the preventative unit, and that provides services to children who are identified as being at risk of being removed. We have foster care, which are children who have come into our care and custody, either by voluntary surrenders or through removal or through TINS placement. And we also have a FAR unit, which is a family assessment review. And that is a unit of caseworkers. I'd like to characterize it. It's a little bit of a kinder and gentler CPS. It doesn't necessarily arrive at addressing situations that meet the threshold of removal, but they do require some degree of intervention. So the way that we engage those cases is a little bit differently. But, you know, an individual child or a group of children or family can also have engagement with all of those units in child welfare, depending upon how we arrive at becoming aware of a situation. So that, personnel-wise, is really where we are. All of our other units have relatively remained intact. I think when I was at last month's meeting, no, it wasn't this meeting, I'm trying to keep track of my meetings, I think it might have been the Ways and Means Committee. I was asked the question about the vacancies that we have on any given time. And I always think it's an important area to address. You know, given the size of our department and the number of staff we have and some of the turnover that has been discussed, it's not uncommon that at any given time we might have 10, 15, 20 vacancies. And we are putting all the effort that we can into maintaining viable and qualified people in those positions. But the other thing that I would add to what Dr. Smith's remarks were, when we arrive at having somebody retire or resign or who is dismissed, time elapses to get approvals to fill that vacancy and then to go through the list. So at any given time, while it may appear that we have these vacancies, it's for very rational reasons. We're always working very, very hard at trying to fill these vacancies. And again, sustaining the number of staff that we have, our workloads have continued to warrant it, and for virtually all of our positions, similar to Department of Health and Mental Health, we do capture reimbursement. There's some unique positions that we time study, depending upon what kind of functions they're performing and whether they can support claiming for reimbursement. So personnel-wise, we remain relatively stable. I'm happy to report that to the degree that Dr. Smith also said, I'm confident, you know, that we are continuing to meet all of our mandated duties and responsibilities. We are constantly trying to prepare ourselves for succession planning by identifying individuals that, you know, have the skill sets and also have the ambition and have the desire. Not everybody wants to end up having to supervise co-workers. And that's also one of the unique dynamics about longevity. Sometimes people remain in positions as a social welfare examiner, caseworker for decades. And I think in a lot of cases it's a reflection on the fact that they love their work and they really feel fulfilled and satisfied and it's continued to be meaningful, and they don't necessarily have the desire to become a supervisor or become involved in administration. So that's another thing that's making it a little bit challenging for us. On the program side of things, and I know that John and I worked pretty closely on our early intervention and preschool program, which we've seen an uptick in over the past few years. We provided some information to John and the rest of the county executive staff around why that was happening. And it was essentially a combination of retroactive rate increases, but also caseload increases. So that is a particular area where you're going to see that we've requested more than we have most previously spent. I wish I had Mrs. Carney's husband, Mr. Carney, with me. He was unavailable, unfortunately, because he was at a regional meeting today. But he deserves to be mentioned in my remarks and deserves a lot of recognition and appreciation. He's an example of someone, I want to say 27 years, maybe 28 years, that has come through the county and is just a fiscal genius and has so much knowledge around how we manage the revenue and the claiming, and that we've been able to successfully do that. We work on this year-round. We work on our budget year-round. We follow trends year-round. We try to always be able to bring things to the attention of this committee, the county executive, the rest of the legislature about what we see we might need. Some of you may recall a couple of years ago, mid-year, which was very unusual, we asked for more caseworkers. And that was right around the time that we were really overwhelmed by what we were starting to see with the opioid epidemic. So it's very uncommon that we end up having to do that, and we always arrive at a budget that we believe is going to be adequate for the trends that we're seeing and the increases. You know, some good news in our budget is we've seen safety net over the course of the last few years go down. I think that's a reflection of a strong economy, and individuals and families have resumed being a safety net for each other, which I think is a unique and encouraging development to see. And I think it gives some of our younger workforces enormous flexibility to not necessarily be able to remain in a job, quite honestly, because that's what we see with some of our younger workforce that comes on. They don't, you know, they have the flexibility and the support in their lives to be able to potentially try different experiences. You know, program-wise, another thing that might be on people's radar, you might remember years ago, the state was taking over the Medicaid program, and they had the Medicaid redesign team, and the prediction was that by January 1st, 2018, the counties would be totally out of the Medicaid administration business. That was not quite arrived at. We're still going strong when it comes to Medicaid. While the state has done a tremendous job with regard to community Medicaid and developing, you know, protocols and application processes to become primarily responsible for that, we're still doing all the heavy lifting around the Social Security, disability, Medicaid, the nursing home, Medicaid. Good program. There's 100% reimbursement administratively with that, so we are maintaining staff there. But I don't see us not continuing to be involved in administering Medicaid, which has also become healthcare insurance. And we know that it's obviously a hot topic with the upcoming presidential election. We also, much like the Department of Health, we have to be prepared to react to the possibility that the Affordable Health Care program might be discontinued or modified or changed dramatically. So how things like that may actually trickle down to a county like ours is something that we're going to watch very closely. Doesn't look like there's going to be anything happening in 2020 on a larger scale. Child welfare, there's a few pretty significant initiatives coming down the line. Family First Prevention Services is going to be a new initiative from the federal government that is going to essentially discourage the placement of children in congregate care facilities and try to emphasize, just as the title of it says, Family First Prevention Services, to do everything that we can in our power to put services in place to prevent placement in congregate care facilities or in foster care. But the harsh realities are that it's still probably going to be a resource that we have to avail ourselves of for very difficult cases. They are certainly not the ideal environment. There's nothing about seeing a child in a congregate care facility because of their particular needs, not being, with family, not being able to arrive at permanency in a family environment, whether it's their original family, a foster family, or a relative placement. But sometimes that does happen. So that's contemplated in our programs. So sort of in a nutshell, I think we're prepared to continue to be doing everything that we have always been responsible for doing. One area, talking about, I wouldn't characterize it specifically as a gap, but I think this administration and this legislature is seeing it and working on it, homelessness and housing inventory and affordable housing inventory. I think it's a conversation that, certainly all of us have at some point in time with what we see happening. I think we're doing a really good job with our Ulster County Continuum of Care, which consists of housing providers, which we participate on, in trying to continue to keep our point-in-time count of the homeless at a relatively low number. And we've seen a steady decrease. We've had highs of a point-in-time count anywhere from 400 to 500, getting that down now below 300. But the reality is, if one person is homeless, that's a crisis for that person. So data is valuable and it's important, and it certainly shows us the direction that we're going in. But in other regards, I think there's just some incredibly unusual variables here in Ulster County around our geographic location in the state, the Airbnb explosion. I saw data recently that in the Hudson Valley region, Ulster County has led in Airbnb transactions. That in 2018, I think there was something around 66,000 Airbnb transactions in Ulster County. The next closest county had only 26,000. Wow. And that demonstrates to us that our housing inventory is really experiencing an enormous reduction because it's more profitable for people that can be in positions to offer rental housing to potentially Airbnb for a few weeks of the year than to possibly rent. And I think we're seeing it all around us in this entire county. And arriving at affordable housing, the proposals by developers, what we see RUPCO doing, what we see happening here uptown, what we see people arriving at, including some percentage for affordable housing. No, I don't know if it's something that the county will want to ever contemplate getting into the actual provision of housing. It's an enormous capital undertaking. There's a lot of other ways to support doing that, you know, throughout the municipalities and with the developers and being on the continuum of care. But, you know, certainly I would say that, you know, housing is going to be an area that we have to, you know, be focused on. And again, there's unfunded mandates around some of that. You know, OTDA with its shelter oversight unit and all the requirements that have been arrived at that our shelters have to comply with, and the facilities where we do place people for emergency housing, you know, which we always vet to the, you know, best degree possible. That their certificates of occupancy are in full force and effect and their operating permits are up to date, but there's still the reality that some of these locations need to continue to be monitored. And this is an area where, you know, DOH and DSS collaborate on frequently if anything comes to our attention. And we also have to be mindful that we have to proceed in a way to encourage compliance, and, you know, because if these locations do not remain available, we're only contributing to the reduction of the housing inventory, the emergency housing inventory. We're really fortunate to have a county that has, you know, Darmstadt, the Family Inn, Washburn House, Runaway and Homeless Youth Shelter, Midway. We have a lot of great housing programs to help transition people who are homeless, but we also are placing a lot of people in hotels and motels. That's arrived at, you know, in a thoughtful way as well, to try to place people in locations that are close to where their children might be attending school, where they're working, where they're obtaining services. And the difference between being homeless or being in a hotel room can be the difference between having a warm place to sleep, to be able to keep your basic hygiene, your food, you know, basic needs, their basic emergency needs. But beyond that, we're working really hard at making sure we, you know, screen and assess for other issues. You know, why have you arrived at this place? What can we do to try to help you to get going in another direction? And that's where integrating services with other Ulster County departments and service providers is so vital.
Sure.
So,
Lynn?
No, I've just got a couple of questions for you. On the child care, I see a significant increase in expenditures and not our percentage of what's covered is kind of reduced as a result. Can you kind of give me an understanding of why that is increasing over 800?
The child care program breakdown? That's actually a... Well, I'm going to characterize that as a positive, because the more people that we're providing child care for, the more people are working. The child grant, the block grant child care that's available remains stagnant. This county has always covered whatever the difference was going to be. So when there's been a deficit between providing child care that's covered through the block grant and not, we have always been a county that has had a consistent policy there. And I think the benefit has been realized by keeping people working. So to the degree that that's a reflection of that, and I think, you know, a stronger economy, and, you know, we see, you know, less people on economic support programs.
So if you could, then you might be able to help me. I know we, in Ways and Means, talked about the preschool and some of the increases that we're seeing in the preschool. And I'm not sure what the numbers are, but I'm seeing some services like parent travel, coverage, mileage doubling from what we had before, or having nothing in the budget last year. Are these part of programs that we're going to get reimbursed on, or the Celebrating Families? I'm not sure.
Celebrating Families is a specific program that we arrived at implementing a couple of years ago. That is for families that have experienced removal of children due to substance abuse. So it's a relatively small budget item, and we arrive at having an intensive 12-week program where we bring those families together to share a meal. Mm-hmm. And then after they share the meal, the children and the parents separate to go into group play or group therapy. Mm-hmm. So that's a very specific program, mm-hmm. and it's one where we have really had great completion rates. Some of the phases have even had 100% completion.
And what does that mean, 100%
completion? It means that the individual family completes the program.
The program, and they're and kept together.
They're kept together. I mean, it certainly creates an increased possibility towards permanency. Mm-hmm. It's not necessarily a guarantee of reunification or permanency, but it's definitely one of those programs that collaterally addresses the substance abuse aspect, mm-hmm. and how that's negatively impacting the family. So that's a relatively smaller program, though. The early intervention and preschool, mm-hmm. again, some of those expenditures have been arrived at by retroactive rate increases and also an increase in the number of referrals that we're seeing. Again, we had a pretty thorough and comprehensive meeting around what's been arriving at driving that. We don't necessarily have control, though, over, not necessarily, we don't have control over the referrals we get. If the pediatrician identifies or diagnoses a child with a condition that requires these services, we are mandated to provide them. And what's also unique about these services, we're mandated to provide them regardless of whether or not the family would be eligible to have those services covered through their private health insurance. So,
and does the grant funding then allow us to reimburse parents for, is that where the mileage piece comes
some
in?
Some of those expenses, yeah.
Okay, does it depend on the family condition?
Does.
Okay. And the other one is raise the age. There was a pretty robust budget in 2019, and it looks like we're just going to have a budget that is going to address staffing. Can you explain to me the 2019 budget, which included almost a half a million in professional services, and to this year looking like we're just covering staffing in it?
I think what unfolded in connection with Raise the Age was that when the implementation for 16-year-olds was arrived at October 1st, 2018, we, along with many counties, were working from the assumption that we were going to have a certain volume of 16-year-olds that we were now going to be providing these services to. That actually did not unfold over the course of the year. The reasons behind that might be a combination of what's been always an excellent foundation of diversion services already in Ulster County, how law enforcement has been engaging 16-year-olds, to the degree that I think policing is happening a little bit differently. There's been a reduction. We haven't seen the number of 16-year-olds committing serious felony crimes that resulted in needing Raise the Age services. So as our
as compared to the past is past in the county or just
going forward, because Raise the Age identified a new population. It wasn't necessarily that we knew we had a certain number of 16-year-olds and 17-year-olds committing certain kinds of serious felonies, and we here in Ulster County have been very lucky because, again, of a pre-existing excellent infrastructure of juvenile justice and PINs and diversion services. We also have coordinated children's services at DSS. I think we've been having great engagement, so we didn't see the numbers. So our plan that we proposed to OCFS kind of evolved over the course of between October 1st, 2018, all the way through this year until recently, mm-hmm. when we just got our plan approved. So it has been arrived at just being designated around staffing positions, and again, that is going to be something that we'll capture 100% reimbursement for if we arrive at having the children who are 16 and 17, because the 17-year-old implementation just started on October 1st. Mm-hmm. It's a little bit of a moving target. It's going to depend, again, it's a similar, I think, dynamic that Mental Health and Department of Health sees. We don't know exactly how many we're going to have.
Did any of these dollars get transferred over to the budget in probation then? Is that where some of this would be picked up?
Probation also has a module. Yeah, DSS has a module,
okay.
A service and a
so
probation.
Is this that, would this year's plan be, a portion of that plan be transferred over to probation? Because, I mean, your current run rate on that, it looks like it's just staffing, because it's in the 70,000 mark.
Yes, it's
so
barely
it did,
on the low end.
Yeah, so it's like none of these programs were services that had been earmarked, professional service that had been used. So I was trying to understand, did it get transferred, or is it just go away?
I can't speak to probation specifically,
okay, so we'll look into that.
What they did, but I know at DSS we needed to be prepared to have programming if we arrived at getting an increase in the raised age children.
Mm-hmm.
And it just didn't translate.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It didn't end up being arrived at. So
you're anticipating the salary for 2020 to be covered in a grant?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, absolutely.
Right.
And again, that's where we have to be on our toes. I think it was mentioned earlier, we got to track each of those cases closely, make sure we're capturing the reimbursement. If we have a DSS caseworker that's allocating some of their time to a raise the age child, then we want to make sure that we're claiming and doing the time studies for them.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Am I allowed to say anything? I don't know if I am.
Absolutely.
Discretion of the chair.
Okay, just two things. I should know this, but how are grants written? Is it like department? Do you write them, Kristen? No, I'm just kidding. No, does every department have their own grant writing function, or is that
we team up
county-wide?
To write the grants. We have a person, our deputy commissioner, Barbara Sorkin, is really talented at
mm-hmm.
writing grants and has a great skill set for that. If we identify something, we'll
mm-hmm.
sit down and team up and go through what all the requirements are, so we don't have anybody specifically
right.
designated.
Yeah, I'm just curious how that happens. I don't know.
The only true grant that Health and Mental Health have is WIC, which is a
okay.
5-year RFA that you fill
mm-hmm.
out the application, and CLIP, which was done way before my time. The rest of the money that we get is enhancement funding through the state, so they're not true grants that you apply for.
Mm-hmm. I thought the executives office had a grant writer. I don't know if maybe it was Mike Hine, maybe? Yeah. No, okay. Okay.
They didn't tell us about it.
Yeah.
I mean, we still try to, carefully evaluate any of them.
Right.
Sure.
And what you have to look at, too, are the deliverables of the grant.
Mm-hmm.
And if that demands hiring more staff to work the grant. If it does, then you're investing in the longevity
mm-hmm.
issues and whatever of that employee. And when the grant runs out, basically the funding for that position runs out. So it's not as though every grant were, gifts from heaven. It's that
out-year expenses
that you don't
want. If it's sustainable or can be folded into, and you want to know. Yeah.
Some of them actually
want
to. You already have to demonstrate that you're spending funding on
right.
certain activities.
Before you can claim and reimbursement.
Some are limited around
right.
the
mm-hmm.
direct care.
Yeah.
It can be
yeah.
any kind of
right.
A lot of them you can't
space.
Supplant, so you can't
yeah.
use current staffing. You have
correct.
To hire new staffing. It's like
it's a nightmare, in other words.
Right. So
it can be worth
a lot
it, though.
Yeah, sometimes
it
is.
It's
the creativity
yeah.
that's involved in it.
Yeah.
But often,
one more.
In terms of the question you had about our office having a grant writer, often the grant requires some specialized knowledge to know
correct.
Where to find the grant.
Sure.
So often it's becomes part of the programmatic challenge of each department. To
yes.
Right. Yeah. No. It definitely predated your time in the executive's. When I thought there was a grant writer, I thought Mike had one. I don't know if it was naturally part
was
of the staff. There was.
If
right.
the department could recognize some grant areas that they wanted to
mm-hmm.
attract or
sure.
get, to have somebody with the knowledge of piecing the grant writing part together, working with the department staff.
Sure.
There is. Ultimately is a determination of efficiency of staffing, whether
mm-hmm.
it stays with the department, whether somebody centralized makes sense to do that. So I think that's, but as of right now, we don't have
sure.
it.
Sure.
Yeah, just on the grant, sorry, just on the grant writing side, I mean, it's identifying a grant, but it's also identifying a need. And then if it goes away, some of them have an expiration date, how do you assess whether or not you can legitimately get funding at the county level to support a program? And how do you assess that? How do you go in then and say, well, we've lost the funding, but here's the value add of this program in our community, and here's how we're measuring
so
the
we
value and the
that.
Success?
Because we've maintained the WIC program since...
Oh, for that? Yeah.
I'm sorry, but I didn't...
We haven't faced that because we've run the WIC program since, I think, the 70s or 80s, so that hasn't gone away. And again, it's they award it through an RFA, so if we didn't get it, it would be awarded to some other entity that applied for it, so we wouldn't continue to maintain it. And
but that is that the only grant, is that the only program where you would hire staff to provide a it, service, or, I mean, I
yeah,
cause you said some
of the only two that we
right.
have.
Okay, I see.
Right.
So
but also,
for you?
The, I think the feelings of the county had changed over those decades since the WIC grant business. And the WIC grant RFA is also slanted toward if you've already had it in your
right.
and
it,
to
it,
local
so
government, they do
yeah,
tend
yeah.
to favor us mm-hmm. in terms of the process, but or the awarding process. But you know that came about at a time when hiring the staff, the nutritionists and the nurses and whatever to, you know, to staff that, that was something that was done. But in keeping budgets flat over the course of the last at least decade, it really wouldn't have allowed for saying, oh, here's a wonderful program, the county's going to invest $500,000 in that program. I mean, we weren't in a position that that was something that was entertained because of the need to really, in a way, deflate the numbers of people who work in county government, right size or whatever you want to call it, but to reduce it over time to what maybe a third of what it had been at that time. And, you know, so it's been a very different world that we've looked in the past decade or so with respect to those kinds of initiatives.
I think we're probably a little more active just because there's a lot of organizations that do sponsor opportunities for grants, and it's not these large amounts. A perfect example is the Family First Prevention that is coming down the pipe. There's an organization, the Casey Foundation, that sponsored a grant to support counties that are going to be implementing Family First Prevention services by providing to us a consultant that convenes training with us and our partners. So we applied, we were deemed eligible, and we received the grant. It's only going to be for a couple of years, and they're basically covering the cost that's being expended on the consultant. So we've been assigned a consultant from Washington,
D.C. So it's building skill in the unit,
yeah.
getting people
exactly.
comfortable with what they have to deliver.
And we demonstrated to the foundation that we were going to be able to convene a group of providers that were in kind of central role in implementing family prevention services. So that's a real win for us as a department in the county because we brought this service to ourselves as professionals and to the rest of the service providers. So it doesn't always function in.
Right.
So sometimes it's not these issues of sustainability kind of ongoing. And then VOCA grant, VOCA picked on the CIMAC. Now they have a specific focus on enhancing organizations' ability to provide to a very specific population. And they cycle in 3 and 5 year cycles, and they have a proven history of collaborating. So with our family and children advocacy center, we applied for and received for the next 3 years a VOCA grant, and it's going to be roughly $130,000 a year towards designated kinds of services. I want to say that
not necessarily hiring
right.
staff.
Exactly,
so.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Not necessarily,
okay.
but there can be the possibility that has matching attached to it. I think there's a 25% matching. We're going to be able to do something really exciting and bring in a caseworker aide and get a therapy dog. And we've been working on this for a couple of years. They're like big pieces that are finally merging together because you have to apply with the organization that can provide you with a therapy dog, and you have to find a position somewhere to be partially funded, and we'll see how it works. And 3 years is a nice amount of time to see how something works. So there are a lot of great, and we subscribe to a lot of newsletters and engage with a lot of organizations and just keep each other informed about, you know, we heard about this, maybe you'd be interested in it. A lot of our service providers are also doing a lot of grant funding. So, and that also, there's been a lot available. There has been a lot available. So we kind of do it as a team. And I think John made a good point. The people that do the work are probably the most well-equipped to evaluate whether a grant opportunity can enhance the organization. So, but if you want to get us a grant writer, we're definitely going to turn it away.
Well, if you want to make a few calls tonight to get me reelected,
no,
I'll talk about it. So, okay,
Barbara
very good.
I had another question.
I have questions, too. My question, comment, being a family caregiver, I'm Barbara Hill, by the way, hi. Definition of housing over the past few years, dealing with housing with my brother, there's about five different or maybe more definitions of housing in this county. DSS definition, maybe SPOA definition, maybe, I found a couple, of RUPCO is another, and then there's, people may laugh about this, but Family Woodstock has their own definition of housing. I mean, it was kept unfolding.
There's emergency housing, transition housing, supportive housing, permanent housing.
Right.
So no, you're right. On the
and then there's how do you count homeless housing? Oh, but that's what I meant. Homeless housing definition. So, and then it's like you gave some numbers, which, and I really appreciate the attention you paid to that, but it was like, okay, so the numbers maybe it was 500, now it's 400, maybe it's 300, but like, what's the definition of homelessness, right? It's like living, you know, couch surfing and all that stuff. So, yeah, anyhow, I just wanted to say that, you know, I wanted, maybe there's a glossary of what the definition of homelessness is in the county. And it's just, it was quite a struggle there for a while for our family.
No, I mean, we arrive on any given day, we might have clients arrive at our building who, as a result of an eviction, where they were residing, a condemnation of the premises that was no longer being habitable. We had a really complicated case this summer, and, you know, we arrived at coming together, and, you know, with a lot of attention and hard work, we arrived, and that group of people affected were in crisis, so it can be addiction, condemnation. You know, sometimes people are a relationship has ended, or someone has been asked to leave. They don't have any standing to have any residential claim to where they're residing. So it's a combination of a lot of different scenarios that lead to that. Now, it's a complicated set of terms, and I mean, for us, if you know, arrive regardless of what your need, I mean, we're going to try to address, you know, the very basic needs and then begin to assess about what we can do to help.
I'm sorry, that wasn't quite a budget question. That was like a
to watch out
there.
If we're comparing numbers from year to year, that we need to be talking about the same categories.
Did you answer that else, Kathy, or no?
I think Laura has a question.
Yeah, I do, and it would follow up on Robert's question about the continuum of care. Are homeless people are part of those numbers counted if they're in a hotel? And this is kind of a segue to perhaps planning. I think, you know, I look at a lot of our programs. We have wonderful programs here, so I'm not downplaying that at all. But to think outside of the box, and you mentioned housing specifically, and I think the county should really begin to do that. The city of Kingston especially, and even Ellenville, had a whole renaissance. So we are getting city people coming up now, buying $10 million worth of property buying houses that they're just using for weekend houses. And it's causing, and this is a comment that came from the Kingston City Housing in Section 8, that, you know, the tenants that have been in there are given 2-3 months to relocate. It's not affordable. It's not $600 or $700 a month for rent. Even the new Kingstonian, my hearing, is going to be $1,380 a month. That's, I couldn't afford that when I decided to retire, and I was hoping it would be soon, but I don't know now. So, and I know I kind of blended a lot in there. So, the continuum of care when you're counting homelessness, does that include people that you have housed in
emergency
hotels
and shelters?
And looking at the money that you're spending on the hotels, which is significant, should we then start looking at providing Ulster County housing? I know it's a lot.
That's an enormous question.
Yeah.
And I would say that I think what has to be encouraged is, as our municipalities continue to evolve around what are drastic changes in the housing inventory and real estate landscape, that we have to arrive at encouraging and supporting that. We continue to include, specific steps being taken around affordability. I think a really compelling piece of legislation that passed at the state level this year was something that we haven't had, rent control. There is now the opportunity for counties outside of New York City to implement rent control.
Municipalities.
So our municipalities can now explore that possibility, and I think history demonstrates to us, had there not been rent control in New York City, probably over half of the population that resides there would not have been able to continue to live there or retire. Without rent control, affordability would have been something that would have been impossible to arrive at. And I think some of the dynamics that you talked about, we have organizations that want to invest in Ulster County's economy because of everything that it offers, and they're investing in buying real estate, renovating and creating boutique hotels, opening businesses. I mean, we see Uptown Kingston transforming before our eyes.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, we don't want to have that gentrification, render a vast portion of the population that is unable to continue to remain here. So I think leadership throughout the municipalities and organizations on a continuum of care, we have to continue to really be having that conversation. Whether the solution is arrived at by having the county get in the business of acquiring and being responsible for the capital investments of managing affordable housing, that remains to be seen.
Right, and then you get the NIMBY factor. Because, when people think affordable housing, they think projects in their backyard.
Mm-hmm, right.
So, and then you're going to have, a lot of issues. People come out and speak out against it. No, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. Backlash. Didn't say it would be easy.
So because it doesn't have direct implications for this budget, I would suggest that we do push that one down the road, but I would ask the executive's office to maybe think about convening a task force that can involve planning, economic development, I think social services for sure, and look at ways that we as a county can help. I know in Shandaken that we have buildings that are potentially multi-family houses that are in disrepair. And that we still have some despite all of the purchasing for short-term rentals. And it makes me think that if there were, a coordinated effort to help people understand how rent control might play out in rural communities and what purchase of housing stock by RUPCO involves, which is not the creation of a project at all.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, it may not even be centralized enough to make most planners happy, but it might be good enough to make people who are living in a motel very happy.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And we still have some housing stock available for mortgages that are down in the rent realm where people could pay for it. Mm-hmm. So, and I don't think that's true just of Shandaken and Hardinburg and some of the
more remote communities have that opportunity.
Yeah.
But again, that's where engaging even the municipalities, the supervisors have to be part of the solution because mm-hmm. they're controlling their planning and zoning. And
absolutely. But supervisors come into that job with varying degrees of background, experience, and
you're
motivation.
Right. Yeah.
So the county could provide maybe an anchor
some
on that.
Leadership, right.
And I know that the planning and RUPCO and some structure is there, but it doesn't look to me that it's been sufficiently well utilized. So I'd like to just put it on the table for 2020, whoever's mm-hmm. here. That is something that we try to see if the county can help foster those communications and open up any log jams that have occurred just because of people not knowing.
I think Dennis has done a pretty good job, even with the Airbnbs, with the county planning board, which then kind of goes back to the communities to talk about it. But
I agree.
But I think there's more opportunity.
Let's put that on steroids, maybe.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Wow, that's a
beautiful
term.
Yeah.
I like it.
It's one of the few things I want to put on steroids. Not any people, but planning departments, yes.
Yes.
Initiatives, not people.
Yes.
Okay. Well, before you go, perhaps we could take a couple resolutions out of order here, because mm-hmm. I know Laura has a couple of questions regarding 479 and 490. So we'll start with 479. If I can get a motion.
I'll make a motion to move it.
Second.
Yeah.
The question on this one... as part of the contract, it's for domestic violence, but it specifically said assistance with paralegals within the document. Just a family doesn't have paralegals on staff. So
the language that I think that you're referencing has to do with it's non-residential domestic violence services. And what we've arrived at in this contract is having a domestic violence counselor from Family of Woodstock come to the Department of Social Services to engage clients that are referred for DV circumstances. It's been very successful. This is a draft version. Mm-hmm. There was some conversation with Family of Woodstock earlier this year that mm-hmm. that person was going to be leaving, and we might have been considering the possibility that they were talking about paralegals. But this is still a draft, so this hasn't been finalized.
Okay.
I think maybe adding an and or. The person really functions as an advocate for clients who are experiencing any kind of DV in terms of assisting them with taking the necessary steps to try to ensure their protection. Things like temporary orders of protection, stay away orders, custody orders, child support orders, things of that nature. So it's not necessarily just limited to circumstances where there's any type of criminal proceeding. It's a very mm-hmm. preventative based kind of program.
Would that be more under the DA's purview?
It's not really under the DA's purview.
Okay.
So sometimes there can be referral and conversation mm-hmm. if there is an active criminal investigation or criminal prosecution, but our experience has not necessarily been that we've gotten involved at those stages. It's always really interesting to me that, you know, we want to see what sort of outcomes are arrived at. And in all of our contracts, we always strive to have performance measures. And so what we arrived at in 2018 with regard to this position, that this consultant, this advocate, helped to establish 106 different transactions over the course of the year around temporary orders of protection, stay-away orders, child support orders, custody orders, and, you know, has also, I have to say, just been essential in creating an environment by virtue of the relationship that has been forged with our social welfare examiners of trust and consideration. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're sitting down in an interview booth at DSS, and you know, our social welfare examiner is assessing a person, and you know, they're screening for their domestic violence. It's been so incredible to have that consultant right there, and the person's bilingual, which has been extremely helpful. Mm-hmm. So I think we're going to tweak that language when we get down to the end of the year, but it hasn't necessarily really had any relationship to the DA's office, although sometimes there might be some communication with them.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, and then... Well, then, is there any discussion on 479? All right, hearing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay, we will go to 499. Yeah, move for discussion?
I'll move it.
Second?
Second.
All right.
All right, and hopefully this was the right one. but, and there, and I mean, it was with the Columbia University too, but it's an awful lot of money for a study. Mm-hmm. So, and it's more for data collection, and I mean, I'd really rather see the money go towards mental health, because I noticed that some of that has dropped down. The opioid issue is increasing. You know, I'm meeting people who have actually had to boot kids out of the house because the insurance on Medicaid covers more than there does, and a 30-day program is just not significant enough. So, you know, where's the bang for the buck on this particular, on the research and the data collection? I know.
I mean, Columbia University, was it a MIDA grant?
It's a grant through the National Institute for Drug Abuse that Columbia University had applied for a total involving 16 different counties, all of whom were chosen on the basis of their opioid statistics, deaths, you know, use of EDs, going to out of county for treatment, all of that. We were one of them, and the total amount that NIDA gave to Columbia to execute this study was about $86 million. Columbia University folks approached us about being interested in participating, but I'll be honest with you, and this is absolutely honest, we just literally, I think it was a week or two ago, received through Columbia a true breakdown of what this grant represented in terms of what the expectations are, the different evidence-based projects that it would be looking to acquire data on. It really gave a lot more clarity to what this is all about.
Mm-hmm.
I'll be honest with you. And, you know, we were certainly anxious to participate in something that we thought would be a benefit to the county, but when it breaks down, and you're absolutely right, Laura, it is a research study, so we're we haven't signed the contract yet, to be honest with you, to engage in it. We did meet with the county attorney to look at, you know, what it would be, what the questions would be that the county would have regarding this. And so this is not something that has been signed off on legally yet, okay? I can't say that we were at fault, because we've been asking for this kind of clarification ever since they approached us, mm-hmm. and identified us as one of the 16 counties that they were going to focus on. But we had all these same questions. What are the deliverables? What are you going to achieve? Can we use any of the money to support media campaigns, mm-hmm. to support treatment? We hadn't gotten the answers. And so we've held back on signing off on any contract with Columbia to participate, because we felt exactly what you're saying. This is all research to support their research. What is it benefiting the county ultimately? Right. When we know what we want to engage in through an opioid task force work that's been going on, we know we want to have treatment in the jail, we want to have treatment in the emergency room, starting the MAT, the Suboxone, etc. So we kind of know where we wanted to go as a county, and you know, we wanted to see where, you know, this grant was going to be in sync with that. And the answers were not forthcoming, and we were bothered by that. So we're still asking those questions, and, you know, before we were going to sign off on that contract. But that
and that's the same for the $499 for the health research, because actually that's the one we...
That's a little different.
That's a little bit
HRI
different.
HRI is the one you're talking about on that one.
Right.
Yeah.
The one that's to a state, and without knowing which contract is attached to it, we have one for the preparedness program and one for the OD2A, which is the opioid.
Right.
This one was...
Which is money
overdose
to the county
and again, state of program.
So that's money that the state gives to HRI that goes to the counties, and that is for direct, that's for training peers.
Right. Okay, so this is more of a benefit. This
yes, it's clearly different than this other one.
Because I'm looking at both of them, what's up with all the research? We don't...
Yeah, the OD2A is in research.
That's a good question.
To put in the perspective from somebody who's trained in doing clinical research, I think that some of the information that would be done through this research study is information we would want to have, and that we might have to be paying somebody to do, and if we're trying to free up people to do other kinds of work, I think that it might have a benefit at that level. And second, we need to know, and Columbia has, I think, step forward to kind of be at the leading edge of making research results available to us. So to be participating in that seems to me to be a value if we can manage it.
If we can manage it. But
the goal is to reduce opioid deaths.
Right.
And here.
Yeah,
right here.
By 40% too. But that's the goal. By getting data to support certain interventions that might be then classified truly as evidence-based interventions and what have you.
Yes, which we know that OASIS has a lot of trouble keeping up with medical advances, being, 15 or 20 years behind on Suboxone. So when somebody says that they've got money to get the evidence to provide two groups like that, that, in my view, have held us back from treating
kind of
people.
Investing in the future.
Yeah, I have a very different kind of, you know, and I know you have to implement it if you sign on to it.
We
so.
Wanted to know what are the conditions, what are the deliverables for which, you know, as it was originally proposed, it was two positions, a project director and coordinator. Then the latest rendition is four positions.
So with each wave, something new comes along. Mm.
Right. And so the question was, does this mean, again, when we looked at the money for the first wave was $152,000 or something like that, which wouldn't support four positions. So then they said, well, maybe two part-time and two full-time. But are we hiring those folks? I don't think so. Or are we going to contract with a CBO, mm-hmm. like Family Services or Access, who already provides service in the county, mm-hmm. to then do the work?
But this goes back to the conversation we had earlier, where the Department of Health has not, over time, managed a lot of grants. And this is a big-time grant to come in and, you know, maybe this grant would require a grant manager. And we could even talk to Columbia about that.
Well, it does.
That is
one
of
the things.
It is one of the things.
Okay. So part of what it looks like now might look differently if that grant manager person were already somebody in integrated. And yes, it is a question whether you would be having that person long term. I think the way this grant is set up, it wouldn't be anticipating that, but you wouldn't be doing the research after the grant expires.
Mm-hmm.
So you just want to keep that person in long enough to completely close out that research part of the grant. And so I think that it's, you know, we should try to provide you with the support you need to be able to participate in this, is my feeling. Because my training is from places that do this, and it seems like we have such a need for research which would show that some of these programs, clean needles, you know, for in many places still won't give clean needles to people, knowing that it's not the opioid in that needle that is dangerous to them. In the context of HIV, it's the needle having the HIV in it. So it's something about which I feel strongly, and I guess
research background too. I actually have a master's in physiology in addition to that stuff, but so I know how to do, you know, all the kinds of research you're talking about and all the academic things that go along with it. So in dealing and speaking to an academic institution, you know, in terms of defining a grant, though, for the purposes of county deliverance on the deliverables on the grant, we wanted something very well defined so we know what we were participating in, and that was not forthcoming until I saw this literally last week, an attachment on this. And we still have a number of questions. It is, but we still have a number of questions. That's why we're engaging with the county attorney to go through those questions to make sure that what we're signing, we actually can deliver our part of the bargain on this, because obviously there is one. So, you know, but in order to know what that is, we had a number of questions that had to be answered. So I get what you're coming, where you're coming from, and that's what we kind of had the sense of in the very beginning. But then as it got closer and we weren't getting answers to our questions, then we were beginning to become a little uncomfortable with it.
So would it be helpful to you for us to go ahead and pass this piece of it so that, I mean, that you have the discretion, really, to go forward? Or
that
you
could be a compromise in that sense, so that after,
I mean,
we
this
get
doesn't
these
obligate
answers,
you, right?
Right.
And
right.
You'd
right.
still
right.
be able to
exactly.
I think it does.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And but if you're
exactly.
not happy that it, you're not given a work plan that you understand and feel is going to be implementable and useful,
and
I'm not pushing for you to take something that you think doesn't measure up.
No, that's,
I just know that Columbia and other places are, like many of our situations, they lag behind these days. Because, you know, things are bigger and clunkier, and so it may come together in a way that I'd love to, you know,
and
keep
and
the option that we would do it.
They're not used to dealing
with municipalities.
Yeah, exactly.
It's
so they're struggling a bit through it.
Government, that's
they're
the reason
struggling.
We don't have a lot of this, is because there's no prior path to follow.
Right. This is true.
So
if we can overcome
in fact,
that, it would be great.
I was surprised that they even engaged with us in New York.
Yeah.
The way they had, because there are four states involved in this, Ohio and Kentucky and whatever, us and somebody else. But, you know, they were. But I think maybe they knew.
I think we're the only county, right?
No. Some of the other, there are other counties in 16 counties,
okay.
really. But to what degree the county was working with Columbia varies and which departments were going to work.
Kathy used all your time, Julie. So.
We're going to have to
Did
move on.
Did the honorable legislator from Ellenville cede his time today?
I just believe that when you're talking about research, we're fighting hard to fight it our way. We're looking for ways to do it. The broader the research base, it will keep in some ways us from trying to invent a wheel because somebody else got there first. So a part of being a part of that research group is us getting that information, giving out our information so that you end up with a full-fledged team where everybody isn't necessarily trying to reinvent. They've got a piece here and a piece here, and you put together a whole program that makes your fight real. So I don't have any problem with providing money toward the research to a larger group. It would be, if we provide it just to ourselves, we're narrowing our availability to the information. So I don't have a problem with us being a part of a research group. We're researching one way, they're researching another way or another program, and when it's all over, you've got a piece of every one of them that makes every one of those teams stronger and more able to deal with the problem. And it's bigger than New York, which is the reason when you talk about four or five states, you just broaden every one that you can get into it, you broaden it a little bit, and the knowledge. Somebody out there has more knowledge than the people that we have working on it here. So by the time you get through, you've got his good knowledge, our little bit of knowledge, when we stumble upon something that works for us, it broadens the network. So I think it's well worth the effort. Yeah.
I agree.
Next time I'll let him talk first.
Yeah. That was quick. Yeah, I think we're actually discussing 498, right? And we had moved 499.
I thought it was we moved 499.
So, well, is there any other discussion on 499?
Yeah.
499 I think is okay. Great, and we should pass it.
Mm-hmm. So all in favor, 499.
Aye.
Aye. Okay. And then we got to move to the second.
Resolution 498. Since we just
discussed it.
Right, right, right.
We just discussed it. We
might
as well vote on it.
Yeah, so we need a second.
Yeah.
I'll second.
Okay. And all in favor?
All right.
Very
all
cool. Thank you.
Okay, then we
can
go.
And then we'll go on to the other. Yeah, we give it out opportunity to cut everyone loose if you don't want to stick around. But
Actually, just quickly, before I leave, you had a question on 488.
The community college?
Yeah.
Oh, I did, but do you have anybody here, or are you?
Mike,
you?
That's through.
Oh, is that through you as well?
Yep.
Oh, okay.
Sort of.
I'll make a motion then to move 488. I'm sorry.
Yep.
Second.
Brevity is
okay.
Laurie, I didn't realize this was through you. You know, the question was, you know, what are the deliverables on this? And because it's my understanding that our enrollment in Ulster keeps dropping. And I see that we only have three schools, and maybe I'm just misinterpreting what this is. I thought it was more an outreach to get more kids to, you know, go to a local college, you know, as a stepping stone before they go out, maybe for a four-year degree or even to get a four-year nursing degree. But, so I guess that's the question.
I mean,
right
I think the basis of the program has its origins in obviously trying to arrive at getting local citizens in the community, whether they're graduating from high school or they're already in adulthood enrolled at Ulster, for purposes of getting into programs and ultimately getting a degree that'll help them to be able to be productive and be involved in a profession. The deliverables are to basically contact and provide services to a minimum of 75 individuals. And what we were able to arrive at in the 2018-2019 school year was we had a total student participants of 129. Total college ready participants ended up being 69. Total college ready participants enrolled into SUNY Ulster were 38. And this student success program end of the year report was arrived at by the individual at the college who basically operates this program, and the participating schools included Ellenville, Kingston High, and Onteora High School.
Mm-hmm.
I think they do look towards expanding that number of high schools that they're contacting, but they have been able to arrive at providing services to the number that is set forth in the agreement. We also expanded this to basically include recruiting students who had a household income of 200% or less of
okay,
the poverty
so it
level.
Okay, so income-based
yeah,
and
need-based.
Okay.
And
okay.
The reality there is that there hasn't been a large number of DSS clients, but we also didn't want to limit it
mm-hmm.
to just DSS clients. So we feel like it's been a great mm-hmm. collaboration. We're committed
okay.
to continuing to do it. You know, and I know having enrollment at our college, you know, is something that's very important.
Yeah, so. Yeah, it was great. I got my associates from Ulster, so it's a great stepping stone. Okay.
All right.
Do you want to hold on to this because it actually has a kid's name in it?
Yeah. No, I just gave two.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay. All right. Good. We're going. Move into the rest of the resolutions then. What do you think, Kathy? I know that you're sometimes in blocking mode over there. You see
anything
or
yeah.
not really?
All the family ones? Should we block those?
Perhaps.
Yeah, I think that's. You want to make that a motion?
Sure.
I'll make that a motion. So that would be from resolution 479 through 486.
So we did 79, so we'll do 480 through 486?
Right.
Okay.
I'll second that.
Okay.
The block? The block? Discussion on the block? No? All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. And then move.
I move the resolutions. So that's the block?
Yeah. Second.
Second.
Okay. All right. Discussion? All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Yeah. Very good. We'll move next. Let's see what we got next.
Is there another group we can prepare?
Yeah. I think so. There should be at least one more group in there.
There were
four for Berkshire Farm, three for Berkshire Farm. So resolution 491 through 493. I think it's just only three.
91.
But
okay.
I would make a motion that we block those three resolutions.
Second.
I'll second.
On the block, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay. Discussion as blocked. Need a motion?
The resolutions.
Is this tied in at all to the restorative justice? Some of these programs, especially the ones that involve the youth at risk. And I'm not sure if it was Berkshire now or not, or if it was Liberty Resources. I think it was Berkshire. Or is this again something totally separate?
No.
Okay.
Liberty Resources, that's part of our coordinated children's services program, and that's multi-systemic therapy.
Okay, and Berkshire.
They're going to exist outside of Raise the Age, and you may have a 16 or 17 year old who, as a result of some type of Raise the Age activity, could engage with multi-systemic therapy through the coordinated children's services.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
I make a motion that we block resolution 494 through 496, all for Liberty Resources.
I'll second it.
Discussion? On the block? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Make a motion that we approve the blocked resolutions.
Second.
Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. I think that's what I can do for you.
Yeah, that brings it up. But we only have a couple
of ones. So which ones are
still left, Nettie? I'm working on it.
You want this back?
494, 495, nope.
Yes, 90. Columbia, we did that one.
How about 445?
The beginning.
Yeah,
445. Okay. I'll make a motion to move 445.
Oh, I believe I have to look
That's family of Woodstock?
Oh, not on that one.
No, no. Kathy, you're good. Kathy, you're around 487 and 490, and then there was one other one you said.
Right.
479 through
445 is what we're on?
Yes.
You would be right.
I think we discussed this at the last meeting.
Yes, that's the salary now.
Some detail.
Was there a second?
I would second.
Okay.
Any questions? Concerns? Mm-hmm. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
So, 453.
It's 453 that I need to recuse on.
Okay.
Family connection.
Okay. All right.
Familial connection.
Move for discussion.
I'll move it.
I'll second.
Second. Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Abstain.
This is grant money, right?
Damn it. 452. Okay.
477.
I'll move it.
Discussion?
I'll second.
Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. What do we got next?
How about 478?
478. I'll move 478.
Second. This is our drug testing of just expanding it by a very small amount.
Yeah. RSG1 diagnosed. Okay. Very good. Discussion. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Oh, I'm ending up with a whole pile. Man, brain just slow down.
All right. 487.
Yes, that's a good one. All that's right. Kathy's abstaining.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which one was that?
487. That's with Gateway Industry.
Familial connection.
I'll move it.
All right. Second?
Second.
Discussion. All in favor?
All right.
Aye. All right. 489.
YMCA.
YMCA. Yep. Discussion.
I think I understood this one.
Which one? 489. Yeah.
It's just for. Is it empowerment for young women or
families now?
Yeah. What's families now?
That's the program.
No.
Commissioner Royal Protein.
I will.
Family now is a program where. Around preventative services, and we bring support into the household for any number of issues that might be taking place in the household. It could be educational neglect, it could be hygiene issues, and
just really a broad type service
just to try to stabilize and address any kind of issues from deteriorating or escalating into creating more serious problems.
Okay.
Utilized in a lot of cases where we have toddlers and infants.
Okay, so this isn't a new program because
no,
I don't remember seeing this one before.
It's not.
Okay.
Was it always run by the YWCA?
My recollection is yes.
Okay. Yes. That was the part that seemed new to me.
Mm-hmm.
I recognized the program.
Okay.
All right, all in favor?
Almost, it's been there, so.
Yeah.
Aye.
Aye. Yeah. 490.
I'll move 490.
480.
Which one?
490. We're on 490.
I will move.
This is with Gateway Community Industry.
Second.
I have that one crossed off. Okay.
Okay. Any discussion?
490, Kathy, you're
abstaining.
I'm abstaining,
please.
Okay.
So, what was it? Julius was hurt?
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, okay.
I was
first.
I'm sorry.
Doesn't
thank you.
Right.
Anything?
Yeah.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Abstain.
And 500. Let's move for discussion.
Resolution 500.
I'll move that.
Mm-hmm.
Second.
Okay. Discussion.
Discussion on that one. That one was actually the
one more. 500. Emergency preparedness program.
Oh yeah, that was a pre
100% other. Reference.
Have you reached out to the? Because I remember the first time our supervisor got. I think she's in for 3 months. This is more. This is not necessarily. This is not weather at all. This is. In case of an epidemic.
Yeah.
And I mean, I came in on this like 10 or 12 years ago. I think that they had done, like, they had actors come in and they did a, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
I can't
you
find my words. We're all really tired. But yeah. And have you done that recently?
Yeah.
Or?
We just did it a couple weeks ago.
Did you? Okay.
Yeah, because the state kind of defines what it expects through this.
And are we ready? I mean, it's an odd community. I mean,
that's
everybody's in the city of Kingston, and you have these very rural areas with 200 people.
We try to be. We basically practice how, for instance, a couple of weeks ago, the preparedness team put together, and we use staff from across the board in our combined departments. The exercise was defined as receiving assets to the county for dealing with a bioterrorist attack with anthrax. So the thing would be receiving doxycycline and ciprofloxacin, et cetera, antibiotics from the state to a secured location to be then distributed to where it's going to be needed to be dispensed out to the population. Mm-hmm. So we engaged with the Sheriff's Department. We utilized the warehouse. We actually have 60-some-odd boxes of antibiotics that we have to bring in. Mm-hmm. Then we have to show how we were going to package it, label it, secure it with shrink wrap, then transport it. And then the next stage was we used the Buildings and Bridges folks to have one of our box trucks to put all the supplies in there. Then we brought it to SUNY Kingston to be then loaded to SUNY Kingston to be then distributed to the population. Other exercises involve how we were going to get so many people through the line to dispense mm-hmm. this. Actually, one of our prime coordinators for this has been Booty. She's really been, yeah, but we do have Ann and Diane who are coordinating this too. So. But it's to prepare for an event like that, mm-hmm. and we do practice it with a lot of people with make-believe antibiotics or injectables. But one of the real point in time exercises that we actually had to give the vaccine was when SUNY New Paltz had the outbreak of mumps, mm-hmm. and we coordinated the same kind of operation. We received 1,500 doses of the vaccine into SUNY New Paltz, coordinated how we were going to then give it to the population there, et cetera, and it gave out 1,500 dosages within the span of 2 days. But it was very successful. But, this is what we do part of this grant, mm-hmm. and it's. I think it's an important exercise.
Oh,
mm-hmm.
That's incredible.
Yeah. Somebody who loves zombie apocalypse.
There you go.
So Paul, you want us to? Oh, we have to call him.
Yeah, yeah. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. There we go. Very good. All right.
On this one?
No, the one.
Yeah, this one. I think there was one that I needed to.
Yeah, that one.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you.
All right. New business, old business. Hearing none.
Do you want me to make the motion?
You got it.
No.
Nobody else make it.
Yeah.
I just want to say that I really appreciate everybody.
Yes, thank you.
This is enormously helpful. Really.
Yeah.
Definitely. We should do it more often.
That's possible. That's very, very doable. And thank you, folks, for your help with all of this. Appreciate it.
Yes, thank you so much. Very informative.
Thank you. And feel free to get us a needs list. If you need, I'd like to do outside the box.
Or lobby, whichever needs to happen.
Right?
I'm hearing we need longer programs for the drug addiction issues that we're having. And I'd like to see some of these doctors called to task with what they're prescribing. The doctor's writing a script for a mind-altering drug. They should also be writing a script for therapy. So it's pretty scary, and get caps on these things so our adolescent teenagers. I mean, I had someone tell me that their friend's 9-year-old tried to commit suicide because she's bullied at school. So I'm looking more for outside of the box programs.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And then you're going to need them.
We're already in places implementing where if you come with a problem, if you deal with a problem.
Yep.
The recommendation mm-hmm. where it's seen is different than it has been.
Yes.
Yeah. Put you under care, put you in somebody that can take care rather than treating and letting you go.
Exactly.
All of those things are starting to work again. Okay. One of those things where people researching, people doing things, the more involved you are, the more you learn. and the doctors that I've been paying attention to are starting to treat things differently.
Yes.
They're starting to look for different means rather than the opioids. So it's,
yes.
Mm-hmm. I believe it's working, it's just slow, and it's
exactly.
not broad.
Right.
So as we really take conscious of it and it gets broader,
mm-hmm.
we'll do. And it's something we can win if we're all paying attention.
I agree.
I asked Nettie for some materials, which she gave me, and I seem to have lost. I think I left them in one of our clerk's offices as I was getting my equipment attended. But what I requested was materials on the contract for awareness.
Mm-hmm.
I also asked for the contract on the don't be a monster anti-bullying. It's still out there. And I didn't think had enough to have it on the agenda and to have those all prepared for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
I just called her today to see if she could find them. But I remain a little bit concerned. Just on a quick glance at Nettie's desk, the awareness contract does mention substance abuse
mm-hmm.
counseling. And my understanding was that they don't have OSS certified staff license to do
mm-hmm.
that. So this is the contract from last year, and so I guess what I remain concerned about two different things. One is, are we drafting materials that contract with a group for things that they are allowed to provide and that we can reasonably oversee, and if they are providing something that is beneficial, which it seems that they are, is there a way that we can bring it into county programming such that it's not provided just to the school district where they are? You know, this is a program we funded several years in a row that only for the first 2 years only dealt with one school district. Now they're proposing to move out from New Paltz to Highland, or Ellenville, I guess, to Highland, or Ellenville to New Paltz. So I'm not opposed to providing a benefit to one part of the county if there's a demonstrated need in that part of the county, but I think, and there is, but I think there's the same need in other parts of the county that's not receiving this. So I guess I'm in the same position, I find myself in the same position I was last year, which is that I would be willing to help draft the contract materials so that what we're asking
mm-hmm.
you know, this group to do with the money is something that they are licensed to do.
That's a good point.
They said at the last meeting that they didn't receive this contract to sign until July.
Mm-hmm.
So there should be already, as I recall, writing in a quarterly report.
Mm-hmm.
We should, even with them starting in July, we should be getting a quarterly report, which I don't think we have.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to be able to continue providing something that's useful to people, but I feel like we're doing it in a way that feels very scattered, and I don't feel comfortable
mm-hmm.
with that. So I guess I'm looking for assistance from the group for how we make this program possible, but also help it become something that's better run where it is, and if it needs to be expanded to the rest of the county, how do we get that scaling? Because I'm not sure this group can do it, and one of the reasons I asked for it to go out to RFP last year was because if you go out to RFP, you might find groups in other parts of the county that are doing
mm-hmm.
it and that we could fund
mm-hmm.
and split the funding amongst several groups and or increase the funding if they all need this level. And so I apologize because I don't think I knew how to make sure that this changed between last year and this year. But I want to own that and say, well, then who's going to make sure that it doesn't keep going for next year going forward? And
I think a large part of that is introduction to schools, because the hard part about the schools. If the school don't request it, if the school don't look for it, it doesn't go there. Mm-hmm. So they may be ready, they may be willing, but you got to introduce the schools and get the schools to say, look, we need to look, or we need to whatever.
What would you think about building in for some of the monies that we might provide a requirement that this team go to every school district and describe to the school board what they do?
Because mm-hmm. You did tell them that you do need a quarterly report mm-hmm. of what's actually mm-hmm. going on, which is true.
Was it sent, though, to the clerk? Because I'm noticing these contracts mm-hmm. say that the reports go to the legislative clerk's office. Right. Mm-hmm. I had asked Amber. She had gotten one. Oh,
I think
do you know?
I'm sorry.
Oh, okay. I thought you knew the answer to that.
No.
Oh, darn it. Okay.
What was the question?
I think the hardest part of all of that is when it comes to the schools, period. The hardest part is if we have a program that's mm-hmm. being funded, mm-hmm. then I would say we make the schools aware. And then once we make the schools aware, then the persons that we have contracted to, the schools themselves will ask for information, mm-hmm. and then we can expect those folks to expand, to be able to deal with it, or give us another way. Mm-hmm. But if we're funding it, then I think we're the responsibility of telling the rest of the county that we have a program that's being funded to do it. That kind of forces expansion if the schools ask for it, look for it, and it kind of takes the load of being one-sided or one peak away from mm-hmm. us. But I think when it all comes to it, each one of our schools makes their own decisions. They know what they want in, they know what they don't want in, even though all of them need it. I've learned that some are too proud to say that's a problem. So it becomes introduction and then open it up to the point to where they know it's there and somebody will go and request it because everybody's got somebody that's concerned about the situation.
Mm-hmm. This is very helpful material and it seems to be like the package, but it doesn't have the contract. So mm-hmm. we probably have to go to personnel maybe to get the contract.
I'll ask Amber tomorrow.
Ask her to do it. Yeah, I know this is a last minute request.
Mm-hmm. Can I just offer something too, because we're familiar with this particular organization, and you know one of the things that as the from our end that we've often really looked for is to make sure that these various agencies that want to provide services are vetted through places like OASIS, mm-hmm. and which is the state agency that would grant a license for treatment facilities. And we know that this particular organization has not successfully done that, even though there was some interaction with OASIS. But, you know, I think that it just... From my standpoint, in the sense that monies do flow from OASIS to various organizations that support treatment that are vetted through them, that there really may be an option to get some monies directly through OASIS if they were to go to OASIS to get their license and the proper vetting and what have you to for their organization and program would be my recommendation. That you know that would actually be more beneficial across the board, because obviously having services for prevention and what have you are very important, but when we talk about treatment we want to make sure that we're recommending the treatment that is considered evidence-based and vetted through the agencies on the state level that would
But it seemed like it was they had very limited staff.
Yeah, it's primarily a volunteer program with peer to peer.
Right.
And if there were representatives here, mm-hmm. I think they would likely say that what they offer is
something that doesn't get funded through OSS, right. And that they are not, they've claimed that they're not doing treatment, that, but they're doing educational outreach, and that that they're not eligible because they're not doing treatment.
Right.
So if what you're saying is that it, and it seems to me that the lines between outreach and treatment blend in this area in particular, and so it might be good for the county to have the standard of we want people to be treatment levels licensed if they're going to be doing outreach, because how can you do outreach and have somebody come to you, respond to that outreach, and not be prepared to handle it? That, which is the concern of mine, with a county-funded program. So I think Dr. Smith and I are of similar mind on this. We continue to have this come to us at budget time, and so...
But that's the only time you're really hearing from them.
Yes, and, you know, I wish that the contract not coming to them in July, they had come to us in March and said, we don't have a contract yet.
Correct.
Or in June, because we had asked for quarterly reporting, and a legitimate report would have been, we haven't gotten funded yet.
Right. It's not just them. If many of our contracted people don't get contracts until July or August, which is...
Really?
Yeah.
No. So I thought it was an unusual situation.
No.
All right. So some of it is that they didn't have the funding to start doing what they already said, and if they were funded in July, then October now, or November would be their time to come to us. So I don't. We don't have to do anything, take any action tonight on this. But I think I will just renew my pledge, you know, between now and the end of the year, at least, to figure out what we need to do so that next year this is different.
I think the idea to search for those that are linked is there.
Right.
The problem with most folks that start doing this, and even our rehab houses, are finding out OASIS, when OASIS deals, it's not easy to deal with. Because
I think that is a fair...
OASIS, once you're attached to OASIS, OASIS is coming when they feel like it to check you.
Right.
So the things that you do are checked constantly. And
so
most of the folks that are doing things like this, if they're not handing out drugs or treatment, then they try to avoid that part. They want to be able to talk to folks and talk folks through what it takes to be free. So getting one that wants OASIS in while I'm talking, I think is easier said than done. So all of that is a part. And, you know, because I know Renaissance is no longer Renaissance because he couldn't deal with OASIS. I know that Samaritan Village is struggling hard. I know the Daytop is gone because it couldn't deal with OASIS like it needed to deal with OASIS. So, folks...
Yeah, this is the other side of it. And as I said, I think that OASIS is not kept up with modern treatment options to enable those to be provided within their programs. And so if we want to be doing that, we either have to be doing research or having unlicensed people. So,
or we push OASIS, which they've actually done quite a bit of work in terms of changing their language to something that is more person-centered, including harm reduction in their treatment models. It takes time. It did take too long, and we were, now we have 2 feet embedded in this epidemic when we probably could have not gone that deep if we had a system that was more nimble. But they are there. And even including peers and having the ability to bill for peers out of OASIS clinics, that's something that they've also embedded in. So I think that, you know, I just struggle with the idea of we need to be able to maintain some sort of standard so that we can ensure that the treatment and the provision of services is at a level that is appropriate for any Ulster County resident. So I fear the running from OASIS, plus I understand it because it took so long in order to be able to get to the standard. but I think that there's a place for them there.
So maybe what our part of our message can be to this group is that it's time for them to take another look at OASIS, because we've seen a shift.
They're shifting.
And we see evidence of that in contracts that we're going to be signing off on for other programs that are working with them on more similar things than things are more similar to this than we had in the past.
Right.
I think that's good counsel. Mm.
Mm. Okay. Very good.
I make a motion that we adjourn.
Absolutely. All in favor?
Thank you for coming.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you very much.
Thank you for helping you with me.